All right, guys. I hope everybody's been pre-gaming. Hope everybody's warmed up, got the fingers stretched out, got the attitudes fully loaded. Tonight is the night in which we dive into that annual fall tradition of the Compass Games catalog. Ha-ha. And so joining me tonight, back for another romp through the Compass Games catalog, OJ's dad, Mike, how you doing?
I am doing well tonight.
Excellent, excellent. And our good buddy from way up further north, Cyrano, is back. Jim, how are you?
Hey, good evening. It's good to be with you.
Thank you, thank you. And because we, you know, we didn't have enough people digging through this catalog last year, we decided to bring BB Mike in because, you know, can't have the podcast go too many episodes without our regular co-host floating around. So, Mike, how are you?
I'm great. No, this is a yearly event. I'm honored to be a part of it.
Yeah. This is turned into a bit of fun. A quick question for the three of you. We've talked about this over the last couple of years with the giant, you know, map size unfold, the multi-folded Compass Games catalog. Were any of y'all on the Compass Games distro list back when it still used to be the little digest sized stapled fold over glossy paper catalog?
No.
Yes.
I don't think I was. No.
Yeah. I found one the other day when I was cleaning up in here, and I'm tempted to like chuck it into the box of other catalogs to take a look at, you know, 15 years from now, like the 1991 Fantasy Flight or TSR catalog that I have, and the early 2000s Fantasy Flight one. I'm totally hanging on to these things because they're fun little artifacts to go back to later. I stumbled across one the other day, and it this is going to sound bad, like the paper quality is so much better. But it's just such less visual oomph than unfolding the grand and glorious Compass Games gigantic bedsheet catalog here. So let's dive right into the Compass Games 2021 holiday catalog. Jim, what's the first game in here that caught your eye as you were flipping through, the first one that made you go, wow, I got to check that one out?
Well, you know me, I'm always, it is inevitable that I will be, first of all, can we say again, this thing is of a whole different time. This is like getting an artifact from another world that no longer exists.
It's getting mail from the 80s.
Right. It's suddenly realizing your AOL email is still active and there's somebody trying to send you something, you know, and I really say that in a good way because I don't know how to market to a kid. I wouldn't know how to market to a kid. That's why nobody is asking me and I'm not interested in doing it anyway. But if you're marketing to me, this is the way to do it. You know, I want to sit down and have a ruminate and do all that. But let me answer your question because it was a fair one. And I actually marked all my stuff that I wanted to look at. My number. And of course, I'm going to, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to pitch some. I actually, where did it go now? This thing is so freaking big.
The unfolded left panel right in the middle.
Yeah, exactly. It's probably inevitable. I just haven't done it yet. One of the things I really want to do with Tabletop Simulator is get some of my war games in there that just, I can sit here and wait for others to do the heavy lift, but they're just not going to do it. So I got to do it myself. And I'm making a number of them that involve cards and I'm getting better with the card maker app that sits within Tabletop Simulator. And so I say all that by way of saying it is inevitable that I will get Napoleon's Eagles 2. This is the second iteration, as the name would suggest, of Chris Muller's card game of the Napoleonic Wars. These are big card games. You could say that they're derivatives of games like Dixie and Eagles, which came to us from our good friends in the world of blocks. But they, you know, it's any game that's got a three sector sort of a deal. And there's been a lot of derivations on this theme, but I've got the first one. I bought the first one, very happy with it. Light, fun, lots of theme. And so, yeah, number two, and then sitting right next to it, why wander away very far? I'm going to break down. I can't not break down and get Napoleon's Imperium. Now, the thing with Napoleon's Imperium, and we talked about this before, that this game was a spectacular table game in the original concept. If you go have a look at the videos and the Kickstarter and all that stuff, You will see that it is just absolutely gorgeous with a custom-made inlaid table with custom-made miniatures and custom-made anything. Well, anything that comes out of a box is going to disappoint compared to that. So my thought is eventually I'll turn it into a TTS mod, but one must buy things before one does such things. So those would be my two that jumped right off the page because, shoot, they've both got Napoleon in the name.
Yeah, yeah. I figured you were waiting for the Napoleon's Imperium mega package that includes the table.
Right. Well, you know, if that's on offer, it's what's the name of the what's the name of the table company that you have such a good association with?
Carolina Game Tables.
Carolina Game Tables. You give them a call. You tell them I'm interested.
I will. Next time I talk to Jody and Clint, I will say something to them. It might be a little bit because they're gearing up for Mace and I'm not going to make it this year. But I will. Next time I talk to them, I will mention it to them that they need to get on that and contact Compass about a combo pack of Napoleon's Imperium with the table.
And a gigantic honking table. There you go.
And then you get to figure out with Mrs. Cyrano how to get it in the house.
Well, and it's that I've told this story before that when we first bought our home, we looked around and we realized if I could get I wanted to get one of the really, really big, it wasn't Geek Chic. That's I'll get their name wrong now. They're out of business now, unfortunately.
Yeah, Geek Chic's the one that went out of business.
Oh, it was then. Good, I got it right. That Geek Chic, they had a number of the really, really big tables, and I thought some of them were cool, but, you know, just a little too big even for my amply spaced dining room. So but that was the other nice thing. If you look at it, yes, it's very nice. Yes, it's quite lovely, but it's also not that big. Although, and again, in true Armchair Dragoons fashion, it would seat 8 people around it, all of us who could wear suitable hats.
Yes, yes. And more importantly, you've got to be able to seat 8 around that such that the suitable hats don't bonk into each other while turning and looking around and leaning over the table and such. So
there you go. Exactly right.
Yeah. So it's like normally a 10 seater, but it's going to seat 8 with hats.
With hat. Right there. There you go.
Mimi Mike, what was the first thing about the one thing that's really jumped off the page to you in here that made you stand up and go, wow, I really, really need to start looking to spend some money there?
Well, now see, the thing about that is, as I look through the catalog, and I only briefly looked at it, I haven't had the chance to actually sit down and digest this properly, but one thing
that's what we're doing tonight, dude.
One thing that stood out was the number of games that I've ordered that were actually on the catalog last year that I have yet to receive. So there's quite a few of those still I'm still waiting for, a lot of pre-order stuff from last year. That said, I will say that the ones that when I glanced through it, let me get this out here, right on the front page at the top, the 1812 War on the Great Lakes, that looks pretty interesting to me.
Okay.
That's a time period I'm interested in, fits the bill. And the other one was, and I'm going to mangle the pronunciation here, it's the Japanese fleet submarine game, Shinsuikan.
Yeah, I'm not going to try. I'll go with what you say.
And I'm totally wrong, I'm sure. But that one looks really interesting, too. I know that Jim won't like it because it's solitaire only. But the neat thing about that one is I like the mechanic where you start off as a small nobody, and it seems like you work your way up through the war through 1945 if you can, and that's really cool. That's a neat idea. I like that. I used to do that same sort of thing with Starfleet battles back in my high school days, where you'd start off and give a Klingon, say, a frigate, and see how far he can advance in the ranks. So
hold the phone. Wait, Star Trek was around when you were in high school?
Barely.
Sorry, I'm the young guy on the phone. I had to get the digs in where I can,
and there's more to come, so stay tuned. So yeah, those are the two that really I think stood out the most to me. That are probably must buys.
All right, Mike, OJ's dad, which one jumped off the page for you?
Honestly, I'm not sure. I've got about 4 of these already on order.
I mean, I think there's a lot of people that have some stuff on order, even from last year's catalog, that we're still waiting to come in, because we've talked a bunch about what's happened over the past year with the global shipping headaches and some of the production headaches where production lines had to be shut down for a while. We don't need to rehash a lot of that on this call, but we do want to acknowledge it. Like, we're not picking on Compass for things showing up late. We know it's affecting the entire industry.
Yeah. Well, we talked about that last year too, right?
Yeah.
On the same show that we understood that a lot of their schedules got jumbled around, but there's 17 featured games in this catalog this year. So I've got 4 of them on order. So The one that probably stood out to me the most that I'm thinking about is probably the Doomsday Project.
Yep.
I think that one, or one that is not on the feature panel, but just on the short list, Fatal Alliances. I hadn't really looked at that before and starting to get more intrigued with that.
Yeah, that one, I've seen some stuff for that one online. That one does look kind of cool. It's one of those ones that looks kind of cool, but it's enough outside my normal wheelhouse that I'm happy to sit down and play somebody else's copy, but there are other things that I'd rather spend my money on. So if you get it, bring it to Origins 1 year, or I'll let you know when I'm coming to Columbus. We'll get together, we'll sit down, we'll play some, but I'm happy to play your copy, you know?
I only charge $20 for people to play.
Yeah.
So wait, how are you defining featured? I'm being stupid. How do I see that? What's featured?
Well, the featured, what I consider the feature, are the ones in the big panels, right?
Oh.
The big rectangles.
Yeah, Jim, Fatal Alliances is one of the ones on that back fold where it's just all the linear listings of the different in-stock games or the Paper Wars magazines and such.
Yeah.
But specifically, it's in the World War I category.
Okay. No, I was, you know, we've talked a little bit about how this is organized in the past. I won't belabor the point. You know what? Again, it's kind of, you know, it really struck me when I was thinking about this topic. You know, we've had this discussion and I'm having it again online for the millionth time. Old man yells at clouds. U-Boat isn't a war game. Okay. It isn't. Stop saying it is. much like this whole argument about what is a war game. I said, I have very strong opinions about what a war game is and what it isn't. But so what? Yeah. And it's kind of the same way I feel about this. It's like, how is this thing organized? I don't care. You don't really have to organize it for me because I'm going to read the whole thing. Once again, there's no way I'm not reading down into the fine print just to find out. It's like, ooh, I can get another. Well, you know, sooner or later, they're probably going to do an epic version of Commands and Colors Jacobite Rising. So surely I need a second one, right?
Let's be honest, right? When we were 5 years old and you had the Sears catalog in front of you, you didn't care how it was organized, right?
Oh, I did. I had to know where the bras were.
that's because some of us were 5 and others of us were 20 at the time.
Okay.
and some of us weren't even born yet, so.
Hey, leave Brant out of it.
You know what the really fun part about this is that I'm still, for almost 20 years, I've been the kid brother in the room in almost every wargaming room I'm in. Thank God we've got Command Tent hanging around these days. I turn 50 next year, and I'm still the kid brother in the room. That's something about wargaming.
It does.
We got Command Tent. We got Chrono. He's about the same age. Dave Pumphouse is close to that age.
So. And Dalinar is not that old either.
Yeah. We've got a handful of kids running around these days, thankfully, so that I'm not the youngest one in the room anymore. I'll tell you, one of the ones that jumped out for me is Enemy at the Gates. I have not grabbed the Folded Gap game yet, in part because I could either spend $120 on Folded Gap or I could spend $120 on 3 other games. And so I went for the quantity buy there. But Enemy at the Gates to me is a pretty interesting one because there aren't a ton of Berlin treatments for Cold War games. There was the famous Berlin 85 game from S&T from back in the early 90s, late 80s, early 90s, that you've got that Berlin game. But there aren't a ton of games that really dig into combat in and around Berlin during the Cold War. There's a bunch of them for World War II with the Russian horde rolling in, but there's not a lot of them where the Russians are defending. And so I'm definitely interested in that one. Now, that one's ticketed for early 2023. So there's no rush to get there. Next year, when we're doing this catalog episode again, it'll still be on that panel. But that is one that caught my eye that I'm definitely wanting to keep an eye on. And then I'm interested in seeing the Third World War, you know, Frank Chadwick sort of pushing that one along and further down the road. I'm looking forward to getting into that one. Again, I don't think any of us really sort of broke the mold here all that much at all. BB Mike's looking at, you know, gunpowder era stuff here in the U.S., Jim's looking at gunpowder stuff involving a short Corsican. OJ's dad's looking for World War I stuff, and I'm looking for Cold War Goes Hot kind of stuff. I don't think that's going to come as a surprise to anybody that knows us even passingly well.
But I will, but I will say though, Brant, that I am looking at the modern stuff too. I just skip right over World War II.
And there's stuff that's outside of our wheelhouses that we're going to be interested in. I mean, you know, again, I'm happy to sit down and play Fatal Alliances with you, but when I've got a certain amount of cash to throw at certain games, I'm more likely to throw it at Doomsday Project or Enemy at the Gates or Third World War than I am at Fatal Alliances. Just right. Like you're more likely to throw it at Fatal Alliances than NATO, you know, so.
Actually, I did. That's one of the games I'm trying to get right now.
Yeah.
I got that on order through NWS. So hopefully he's got it sitting there on in a box. It was listed as inbound, restock inbound. So I'm hoping he's got enough copies to get it for me.
I got mine. So. The audience can't see me turning on the camera, waving it around, but I did run by Gamer's Armory and grab mine, so I've got one.
Yeah, I was slow to decide to pull the trigger on it.
With that said, how you guys want to do this? Y'all want to just sort of randomly call out ones you're interested in, or are we going to do like we did last year where we start at the top and work our way through the whole thing? What do y'all want to do here?
Oh. Let's start off with ones that I know. I don't think you or Jim have anything either on order yet, but we can maybe start off with the ones that we have on order and or that we plan on putting on order.
Sure. There you go.
Yeah.
What do you want to
pay? I have one sort of on order. I have a copy of Brief Border Wars on order coming from Gamer's Armory. So I'm helping out the friendly local game store here, and Compass is still getting a cut of the money, but I got a good local game store here and I want to make sure they stay good and they stay local. And so I'm going to keep supporting those guys. So I do have a copy of Brian's Brief Border Wars on order over there, and I'm just waiting for it to come in. That is my one game that is on order definitively from this catalog. So my list is short. So, all right, OJ's dad, what do you got? What's inbound for you?
Third World War. I've had that on order going on 2 years now. So hopefully it gets here middle of this of 2022.
That's the Frank Chadwick one.
Yes.
All right.
I wonder sometimes with that one if that isn't a little stuck behind his Eastern Front game, which continues to evolve and expand.
To my knowledge, it's gone to press.
Oh, has it? Okay.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure that they talked about that a few weeks ago on their town hall, and I think that was one of them that had gone to press.
Yeah, I think they've already sent stuff to the press. It hasn't actually been printed yet, though, right?
Right.
Am I remembering correctly?
I think so. I only caught a little bit of that.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll get all kinds of comments in the podcast thread about, you know, correcting whatever we get wrong here. So that's cool. Y'all, please keep us straight. Feel free to jump in there and let us know what we've screwed up. But yeah, Jim, to your question, I think it's already out the door and they're just waiting for time on the presses and then the inevitable shipping headaches of getting it back home.
Yes.
So, all right, OJ's dad, what else you got on order with these guys, either directly or through somebody else?
So directly with them is Schutztruppen.
Okay.
That's also slated for mid-2021. Mid-2021. So Third World War were both pre-ordered at the same time. So.
Well, mid-2021 should have already happened.
No. Yes.
Isn't it? I mean, it's well past.
Yeah. But I do know that from the town hall a few weeks ago, it sounded like it had slipped, obviously, after they'd printed these. So.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, like, we don't want anybody to think we're picking on folks. We understand why there's delays and that there are delays, and we are very forgiving of them. But, you know, this one says mid-2021 in the catalog, and we're here at the end of 2021 and, you know, still waiting for it to show up. And that's, you know, that's going
to
happen.
And to be honest, I think that's probably a misprint, because just scanning through this on the big two-page featured section, that's the only one that I see listed as 2021.
Yeah.
So I got to wonder if that's a misprint that it really should have been 2022.
Yeah. I'm betting if you grab last year's catalog, it says mid-2021 on it.
Yeah. Oh, well, so does Third World War.
Yeah.
Because they were both supposed to have shipped this year. So obviously with everything going on, things slipped. So
I'm pretty convinced I commented on Schutztruppe last year. And I'll say now what I said then, which is, while not likely to make my list, it's an area of warfare that is wildly undercovered and I think of tremendous interest. A friend of show, the Navarone Gun, that's an area that he's got a great interest in. So it's good to see a game coming out about that topic. Because it is, there's some crazy, crazy stuff that goes on in South Africa during the First World War. Well, Africa generally. Still
ripples forward to today.
Oh, yes.
So for folks, look, Third World War, we all kind of, you know, mentally conceptualize what's going on there. For folks that don't know, the Schutztruppe game that OJ's dad is referencing is about the Germans in East Africa in World War One. It's the German the Germans primarily on the defensive. But it's the campaign in East Africa in World War One. I'm saying East Africa, it's West Africa. I'm getting this backwards. So, but yeah, that one's, you know, as Jim noted, it's a wildly undercovered area. All right, OJ's dad, anything else you've got on order coming in, or just those two?
Those two directly from Compass. I mentioned I have NATO coming from NWS. Okay. I've also got Stellar Horizons coming from NWS.
Okay. From them.
Which is a space-based game.
Yep. That's I don't think that one's on one of the big feature panels, is it?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, it's right next to the order. It's right next to the order form.
Oh yeah, there it goes. There it goes. I did look right past it. All right.
It's okay. Now here's what I got to ask you about, OJ. Who you playing this with?
Me.
Okay.
Actually, you know what? I think that'd be one that I could probably get some family members to play.
Ooh, you're now, a sunny
if you look at it says right there, solitaire high. So you can play it by yourself. Come on.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Did you say something?
they do have a TTS module for it.
Yeah, I saw that. I was fiddling with it a little bit.
You know, it's just I just like the concept of just being able to try and do something within the solar system that doesn't take you through 300 300 star systems and aliens and all that, right?
Sure.
Where you're competing against other nations. So
yeah, there's been a bit of a trend with these recently, and this is probably worthy of a podcast episode in and of itself, but between Stellar Horizons and One Small Step and High Frontier and Worthington just re-released one, the Moonshot one, there's like a half dozen or so of these, you know, our local solar system, again, to Mike's point, no blue-skinned aliens and no, you know, far-off galaxies and no Tannhauser Gate and C-beams glittering and none of that, this is all just sort of local stuff that's kind of the space race of the recent past and the very near future. There's a lot of folks that have been coming out with these things lately. It's not quite to zombie craze levels just yet, but could be rapidly approaching that. All right, BB Mike, what do you got on order already?
On pre-order from Compass, always something. Looking at the catalog right off, I see Carrier Battles Philippine Sea. I've had that one on pre-order for a while. And then it looks like Death in the Trenches. So this is, that's probably my second most anticipated one that I've got on pre-order from Compass. And the other one, where is
it? You probably had Carrier Battles on pre-order before Compass even knew it was on pre-order, didn't you?
I did. And the final one, here it is, War for America by Gilbert Collins. And that's probably my most anticipated one. I'm really looking forward to that one.
Okay.
Those are the three.
Guys, do y'all remember, was War for America in last year's catalog? I don't recall that one specifically.
Yes. So it was?
Yes, absolutely. Really? Yes.
Okay.
Well, it was actually the man has one spoken. Of the games... It was supposed to come out this year. That's the only reason I know that. And I think I even talked about it in the last time we did this. But yeah, it definitely was.
Well, here's the deal. Look, it's in the W's. The catalog is ordered alphabetically. By the time we got to the W's last year, I was a little punchy. So I don't doubt that I would have absolutely missed.
I'm looking at last year's catalog, War for America, mid-2021.
There we go. Okay. Okay, so yeah, I was just a little punchy. I
think the word is given.
So Death in the Trenches, let me ask Mike, how much of that was the topic? How much of that was Ben Madison?
It was all Ben Madison and Wes Ernie.
Okay.
Because I haven't bought anything from those two that I did not like or love, actually. So
yeah, I know you're a Ben Madison fan, that's why I was asking.
And I believe this is a re-implement of an early version of a War One game that they did. So that makes me want it even more.
Yeah, totally get it. All right, Jim, what's already on order?
It's funny because this is the time when I got to pry stuff out of the wall because I buy games when there's a TTS mod for it so I can play it in good conscience and good faith. And then, or then I decide if I'm going to build for it. So in preparation, therefore, my targets are going to be, and I stress going to be, in addition to those that I already met, I will tell you something. There is a part of, where did it go now? Don't leave. There is a part of Contact Now Red Eclipse that intrigues me. First, you know, a card-assisted fire team level game of tactical combat. I don't know how many games there are for that. I mean, obviously, I was a huge fan of Sniper back in the day, and a couple other games.
Where do you see that in the catalog?
It's a K.
It's a K, not a C.
Oh. Well, if we're going to spell things
properly. A-O-N-T-A-C-T.
Yep. It's right above NATO on the left inner panel.
Well, that'll teach me to go back to school.
Because I see it. And because it's card-driven, it'd be very hard to play solitaire. So that's appealing.
I scoff.
Did I say impossible? The word impossible did not escape my lips. I said,
you know, if you want to challenge me on solitaire play for a game in this catalog, it's Napoleon's Imperium. And believe you me, I considered it.
You're trying to think eight different ways.
But
Mike's got a table with eight different hats around it. He just puts on a different hat for each country he's playing.
And I'll be honest, it wasn't so much the fact that, you know, eight players, but the size of that thing. And I think that's what kept me from getting it more than anything else. But anyway.
Yeah, no, and so this Contact Red Now Red Eclipse is it's a scale I like. It is a period I like. I am a child of Cold War Gone Hot and all that other stuff. And so I really did like that. And the other one, it's very interesting to me. Look, I'm a medievalist first, even before I was a Napoleonicist. Hard to believe, but it's true. And it's a topic that's come up a lot more lately. Volker Runke is going to be doing one of his... Oh, shoot. He has a system. Yeah, the Levian campaign. That's it. He's got that. But Granada, the last stand of the Moors, 1482 to 1492. I observe a couple things. It's a period I like. Number two, I am noticing on a number of occasions here, and I'm a little disappointed that Napoleon's Imperium didn't get one, but mounted maps are showing up a lot in these catalogs.
Yeah. Granada is actually available now, as the catalog notes. Mo's Game Table just recently did an unboxing of it where Mo was showing it off. We had Mo on the podcast not long ago talking amphibious warfare. And one of the first questions we asked of both Mo and Rocky is, what was the last game you had come in the door? And Granada was Mo's most recent game in the door that he had just got in. And he hadn't had a chance to push it around too much, but he said it's a gorgeous package.
That's the thing I observe about it too. And that's not to say that there aren't a ton of grog-like games here, but number one, the prevalence of solitaire. I mean, I want to be crystal clear. I get it. You know, I understand that there's a huge appetite for solitaire games. As you look, you know, companies are in business to make money. And the fact that there's this many that they're willing to put to press tells you something. But the other thing is how our components have changed. Look at the component list for Granada. 137 wooden blocks, 20 wooden castle shape. I'm not sure what that is, but I'm assuming wooden castle shape blocks. 20 cylinders, 20 cubes, 7 markers, and then 2 draw bags.
Yeah.
Right, this is not your father's SPI game, or in my case, my SPI game.
Yeah. So,
you know, this is a very intriguing look into not just a topic I like, a period I'm obviously very interested in, but also a real seismic shift in some ways in our expectations about components.
Based on what Mo was saying on the podcast, this one seems to be a sister game to, I'm going to butcher the pronunciation, Sekigahara, the one that takes place in medieval Japan.
Oh, yeah, Sekigahara. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's a GMT publication, but this apparently uses a very similar system. The scale is slightly broader than that one was. But again, I'm regurgitating what Mo had already said on a previous podcast, so folks can go back and listen to that one. But that's partly where this is coming from. And so the components are a little different because it's not your traditional hex encounter sort of cardboard fest. It is a different set of production values for a different system with the game. So
those two would be the ones. I mean, obviously, other than the Napoleonic ones, and I'm quite sincere when I say I do have to get an order in for another copy of Commands and Colors Jacobite Rebellion.
Yeah.
So hey, Jim. I'm sorry. Granada says it's on a mounted map, or was there a different one that you said?
No, that's what I'm saying. It said it does have mounted map. Yeah, it's Napoleon's Imperium that makes me sad that it doesn't have a mounted.
I apologize. Missed that.
Jim wants a mounted map in every game he gets, which means that every Napoleonic game ever published from here on out has to have a mounted map, or Jim's going to be miffed.
I will say things. I will say MIFT like things. Exactly.
When you receive the Carolina game table, it will be imprinted into the felt, the map. So you'll
very good. Now acceptable. Very good.
I thought it was just shellacked on the surface.
With a shellac overlay.
You mentioned Contact Now Red Eclipse. For folks that don't know, that's Steve Overton's re-implementation of the old fire team system from way back.
Oh, that, so that is fine. Okay, see, now I like it even more.
How much, so when we had talked to Steve about this many moons ago in another place, Steve had given us a run through of sort of what he was changing and updating and tweaking as the development went on. So it'll be curious to see how much farther from Fireteam this has evolved over the past 5 years, if much at all. It may not have it really hardly at all. The whole part about card assisted sort of makes you think that it's probably evolved quite a bit from Fireteam, because there wasn't a whole lot of card assisted going on. Contact Now Red Eclipse was actually at one point going to be published by Lock and Load. Dave and Steve parted ways somewhere along the way, and Steve has brought it to Compass. And so it has gone through a couple of different iterations in a couple of different places. But this, Steve had the blessing from the original designer, and Steve had apparently done some work with the original designer way back in the early and mid 90s to try and update and modernize Fireteam even back then. But with West End having folded and there being some ownership questions about who had the rights to the game, it took some time to sort all those things out. Now Steve's got the rights to do whatever. The greater name change may have something to do with that. I don't know. It'd be pure speculation to say anything about that. But this is the evolution of that Fireteam system that Steve's been working on for a decade or more at this point. So that's where that one's coming from.
Well, now I'm very interested, because I've got Fireteam sitting on my shelf here. I have a lot of fond memories. It was just a PITA to learn, to be honest.
Yes. And let's be frank, those are some damn ugly maps.
Oh.
Fireteam, not Red Eclipse. Haven't seen
it. No. But it was. I'm looking at the fire. Now that you're telling me this, I've leapt in and I'm looking at it. The Fireteam entry on Board Game Geek. It's not even so much the maps; it's those counters.
The counters weren't great, but the maps were just
But the problem is the counters are garish.
Well, to be fair, the maps from Fireteam aren't necessarily more or less bad than others of the comparable time in which it was published, because the ones from the first battle series from GDW are pretty god-awful ugly also. I will say, Jim, that looking at the listing here for Contact Now, there are 12 11 by 17 maps, but it says nothing about them being mounted.
Well, with a game that's got geomorphic maps, I don't know as I'd expect. Although, you know, not that I'm picking, but once again, Panzerleader had mounted maps in what year?
Yeah. Squad. Well, they also owned their own mounting equipment.
Okay. Well, yes. Right.
Making those comparisons to Avalon Hill.
You know, well,
remember that Monarch Printing owned their own press and their own mounting equipment.
Ooh, Fireteam was $25 in 1987. Yeah. That's a little bit of money. That's certainly one that I'm even more interested in, given that ancestry. And remember, the cards are a little funky, but it had that chit pull system for activation. You know, that's what told you who went first in a given round. So probably not that strange.
Perhaps no.
I don't know. I claim no knowledge, but interested.
As Armchair Dragoons continue the seventh season of Mentioned in Dispatches, we need to take a moment to thank those Patreon supporters who pledged at the regimental patron level. So a special thank you to Patrick Mullen, Hethwill Wargames, Steelgrave, Mike Quigley, Staggerwing, Robert, Joseph Knoll, Treb Curry, Kevin Bertram, and Patrick Garrity for their support of Armchair Dragoons and helping us bring you the best wargaming content on the web. You can join our Patreon supporters at patreon.com/armchairdragoons.
I want to make a left turn in the questioning here. OJ's dad, what's one thing on here that there is just no way in hell you have any interest in whatsoever?
2040, the American insurgency.
Yeah, just doesn't scratch an itch for you.
Not at all.
Yeah, we already know Jim's answer to this question. Just look for the listings that say solitaire designed for solitaire play. Scratch those right off. He doesn't care.
No, let me say this. The ones that I'm really mad at are the ones where, and I said this last year, where I really would love, I'm interested in the game. And it's like, oh, this is a really cool game. I think I would, oh. And suddenly I'm not interested.
Bismarck was the one that I remember jumping off the page.
Yes, it was Bismarck last year. I got a whole nother one this year. Where did it go?
Combat 2?
No, combat is, combat makes sniper kill confirmed.
Yeah.
I was interested. And this is something I don't know if BB Mike has said he's going to do this or not, but it always interests me when a game like Imperial Tide 1914 to 1918 says that, and it's based on Pacific Tide, it's a card driven system and it's going to have a bot. On one level, that is Jim having to concede I have lost a fight somewhere that I didn't know I was part of. But on another point, it's like, oh, this I gotta see.
Well, and so here, just to rub a little salt in the wound of your solitaire game, that one comes with a mounted map.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Imperial Tide, the solitaire game with the mounted map.
And Pacific Tide, though it's not. And the other thing is, Pacific Tide is not really something I'd be very interested in. Imperial Tide, much more. And I would lean over. But it's like, and I'm not really saying I wouldn't get it because of that. It is very interesting to me, though, and I'm skeptical. How's that? Skeptical.
Well, so Imperial Tide and Pacific Tide are, in fact, two-player games.
Yeah, I was going to make that statement. Yeah. With them.
You don't
have to use the solitaire bot.
you can, in fact, put your son on the other side of the table and have him kick your ass at Imperial Tide, and it is totally cool because it has a solitaire bot. But is in fact a two-player game.
And honestly, I've said this many times before. I have Pacific Tide. If I'm going to play one of those games, I'm not going to use the solitaire bot anyway. I'm going to play both sides myself. I love it that way. I prefer it that way.
Mm-hmm.
Don't know if that makes any difference there for you, Jim.
I think it's more in that case. It's more the observation that wow, this is a thing that people really want to see, these automata.
Yeah.
You know. Well, shoot, there's a company that does them. So.
Yeah. Yeah. BB Mike, what's one thing in here that you're just not touching that just doesn't do it for you?
The only thing that really stands out, it'll break your heart, Brant, is the Cold War stuff. I'm not a big fan of the Cold War gone hot stuff. I have never been. I do own the what was the big giant Kickstarter that was too good to pass up?
The World War 85 one.
There you go. I have that one, and I will play that eventually. But I'm just not into that Cold War gone hot stuff.
Look, that does not break my heart at all, because that means it's more likely that I'm able to get a copy of stuff and they're not going to sell out of them. So,
there you go.
OJ's dad sort of stole one of the ones I was going to say. That 2040 game does not look like something I really want to mess with at all. But the other thing, this goes back to, again, areas of things that I'm just not all that interested in. The Civil War stuff that's in here, those are just not ones that are going to jump off the page at me as something that I necessarily want to. The Late Unpleasantness is one of them. Honestly, Compass doesn't have a ton of American Civil War stuff for me to avoid. It's not like MMP, which is like 50% American Civil War. You know, there's a lot more stuff in the Compass catalog that I would be interested in, but like The Late Unpleasantness, skipping right over it. That's just not an area that I really am all that interested in. I'm more likely to sit down with Jim and play a Napoleonic game than I am anything from the American Civil War.
So see, this balances out nicely because I'm interested in all those Civil War games. So
there you
I'll handle those and you handle the Cold War stuff.
You could have Brothers at War, you can have Battle Him. I will
take them, sir.
The Tuesday Project games, and I think we'll both be happy. BB Mike, what's a game in here you want to talk about and hear some opinions from other people here on the podcast?
So would these be games that they have that I would want to ask them about?
Well, that or, you know, hey, what do you think of this idea? Is this even worth considering? Or is what have you heard? What do you think? What do you know? What are you all about with those things?
So I'm guessing it would either be a World War One game or a Napoleonic game. So if I had to choose one, it would be Napoleon's Eagles 2. How about that one, Jim? What do you think?
I happily recommend if you know what you're getting into. I mean, I have no idea. I'll make a simple, stupid statement. It's a card game, right? And it's a card game that presents you with the units and with tactics and with leaders, sets up a series, and it's built around battles, which I really like.
Yeah,
I don't like abstractions in my Napoleonics. You know, it's why I really never got into maneuver that much. I like the fact that they have focused on historical units and the art reflects those periods. The terrain cards reflect those periods. But it is ultimately a tactical game played out using cards with all the abstractions that entails. The rules are not expansive. They're not complicated. It's an easy teach. The art is lovely. It's got a great, I've got the first one. And I also really liked, and if I have a problem with part two, which I, of course, as I said, will get, if I have a problem with part two, is they didn't choose boldly in terms of the battle selected. I love Waterloo, okay? I do. But it would have been pretty freaking cool for them to make the same kind of a stretch that they did with the first volume, which was to grab different battles. You know, they grabbed Leipzig, they grabbed Borodino, and I'm just kind of remembering this off the top of my head. I haven't played it in a little bit. But they grabbed battles that were a little off the beaten path, and I thought that was really excellent. And I hope they get back to that if the series is allowed to continue. So, yeah, it's not big. I mean, the box is frankly too big for what it is. There's a lot of stuff that'll rattle around in there. But no, it's in, you know, even if you don't like the period that much, it's not your thing, it's still easy to recommend because you're not giving your life to it.
So would it compare to something like, I'm having a hard time wrapping my head around it's card driven. Is it something like Command and Colors? Do you have
it's not units on the map? It's card only.
Yeah, it's cards. Period.
So it's just cards.
It's a card game.
The units are cards.
So no mounted map with this one.
No mounted map. Nope. They didn't need it.
Okay. So this is strictly a card game. I see that now. Interesting. This reminds me. Isn't there we were at Origins. There was a naval warfare game that was kind of like this. It was strictly card driven.
Yep. Yeah. There's a number of them actually. Enemy in Sight and
naval battles.
And Dan Viersen has a number of them.
Yeah. Yeah. I've got one. I've got one of I think it's a modern naval game.
Yeah, and it's great fun. I've got, I think, all of them. You know, again, as a matter of fact, I've written a review of the tank, the ground version of that for the site. It's a lot of fun. I thought it was a blast. I want to get it here. Yeah, it was Borodino in Leipzig. I wanted to look it up. You lay it out. The units are cards that you set up into the flanks, left, center, right. And in the case of the game, it's A, B, C. And then you get a reserve. They've got lovely pictures of the units on them, paintings, which is really cool. That's really cool. And then you play tactics cards and you mark off who's killing who. And, you know, in that respect, it's a little like an elaborated form of Magic the Gathering or any non-collectible card game. You obviously get everything in the box. And you go out and you play the scenario. And they set up the scenario to have the units on the tabletop that you would have had in the battle. So, no, it's a lot of fun. It's a lot
interesting.
I do want to take a moment and touch on a handful of the games that are in here, because there are a handful of these that we have, in fact, reviewed on the site. Jim mentioned it a minute ago. We've had some of these are the ones that OJ's dad categorized as kind of feature games, the ones with the big boxes in the main part of the catalog. Some of these are on the small part of the fold, just in the linear listings. We had some analysis of Brotherhood and Unity. It wasn't so much a review as sort of a mixture of review and some tactics for playing it. We did have a review of No Motherland Without. Jim, if you remember, you spent a little bit of time on that one last year talking about, you know, hey, if this is your topic, this is your game, because you're probably only getting one game on this topic, like, ever. So, you know, grab it and hug it and cherish it, because this is it. Back in March of this past year, we had a review of that one. Rocky did one for us there. We've got a review of Brief Border Wars in here. We've got a review of Pacific Tide. We've got a big article on Blue Water Navy. And Blue Water Navy 2 is going to be coming out fairly soon, where they take the Cold War naval warfare and bounce it over to the Pacific. We also had a review very early in the site's existence, so within the first month of us standing up, we had a review of Forgotten Legions. And then we also had a very extensive AAR in our forums from Judge Dredd on combat. I mean, that thing ran 6 or 7 forum thread pages with a lot of detail, a lot of great pictures that JD took and marked up on there. So folks that are interested in some of these, we've got coverage of a whole bunch of these. And I'm not even touching on the unboxings that we've done for our different unboxing days. This is just the more extended articles that we've done over time. So between Combat and Blue Water Navy and No Motherland Without and Forgotten Legions and Brief Border Wars, you know, we've got a bunch of these covered. So if folks are interested in seeing what we've got for coverage of them, there's a chance to go see it. There's also an extended, not a full review, sort of an analysis slash AAR on South China Sea that I think that was Rocky that did that one, where it was one of the underappreciated parts of South China Sea and then Indian Ocean region coming out as the sequel, obviously. There's this whole political phase at the start of every one of the games before you actually start pushing boats around the map. There's a political phase that kind of determines the initial setup and scope on the map to an extent, and it can give you some wide variability in the start conditions of the game. In the case of South China Sea, like whose side is Vietnam on? Well, that makes a big difference when you start looking at, you know, where you're basing your fleet. You know, are the Philippines friendly? Are they neutral? What's going on with the Philippines? Because if you got to sail around an unfriendly Philippine islands, that really changes your maneuver space a bit. So Rocky kind of dug into that a bit. So there are a handful of these that we've covered quite a bit over the years. And so for folks that are looking for some information on that, Pacific Tide, look, we reviewed the original one. There's a second printing coming out. How much it's changed? At its heart, it's going to be the same game, but how much have specific things in the rules changed? Couldn't tell you. Don't know that much detail. But go and take a look and see what we've got that might interest you. Just from the write ups that we've done, and then once these guys get all their games in, they can start writing some reviews of the ones that they've got coming in. That's a hint, guys. We're gonna get a copy of Bismarck shipped to Jim, just so that he can give us a review of it. I would have loved it if I had someone.
I sat there and played Dan Viersen Games Napoleon, Field Commander Napoleon Angry. What do you think I'm going to do with Bismarck?
You're going to use real ammunition?
That's entirely possible.
No, he lives in the city. He's not allowed to do that.
Oh, that's a good point. That's a good point.
Who are they going to send to arrest him? They all work for him.
Brandt?
Yes.
Can you be lured? Will you be lured to play Tank Leader?
You know, it is possible. I really liked the original Tank Leader. And so it is something that obviously appeals to me, being a whole tank thing. First of all, I got till 2023 to have to make a decision. The biggest challenge that I have with Tank Leader is its Eastern Front. And the Eastern Front just bores me. And so, you know, I appreciate the tanks. I appreciate the fact that you can sell tanks to East Front fans everywhere, because you can't sneeze in a room full of Wargamers without hitting a half a dozen of them. It's just East Front, after a while, you kind of get sick of it. As much as I like Tank Leader, I played the hell out of Panzer Leader, didn't enjoy Panzer Blitz as much. You give me a West Front Tank Leader and I'm all over it.
What about American Tank Ace then?
Well, yeah, you see, there is the Western Front Ace down at the bottom, and there is American Tank Ace, and both of those are a little more interesting to me, because now I'm driving, you know, I'm driving stuff around where I'm a little more interested. So American Tank Ace, I could be convinced to give it a whirl, you know, and it's solitaire play, so I get the bonus of being able to annoy Jim while doing it. Which this is
Tank Leader.
Okay.
This is a reboot, yeah?
Yes.
Yes, and this is the original
signature edition.
This is another West Ender, is it not?
Yes. Yeah. Because, and they lost this one some time ago, and you know, we were pretty hyped up about it. It's a really good game system. I don't want people to think that I'm slagging the game system. The game system is good. It is fun. Even, you know, back the West End incarnation, as with many things West End, the graphics, you know, hurt your eyes, and you needed to take medication afterwards to recover. But as a set of game rules, they were fun. So the re-implementation is probably not going to be much less fun. I mean, I don't see Compass taking the fun out of the game. I see them putting more fun back into the games, and that's cool. You know, again, it's Eastern Front. And yeah, the original one was too. I'm a little less interested in Eastern Front things these days than I was back then when it was a tank, therefore it must be good. I'm a little more discerning these days.
Sure.
And so that's just, there are some limits as to what I'm willing to chase around the tabletop these days. Again, when you've got a limited amount of time to work with, you're going to focus on the things you're really much more interested in. That's why something like, look, the Russia campaign, the Russia campaign is like one of the all-time seminal, you know, cornerstones of our hobby. And I'm not going to sit down and play that. I just, there's other things I'd rather play. That doesn't mean I can't appreciate its importance to the hobby. You know, I appreciate the influence Led Zeppelin had on rock and roll. I don't want to listen to them all the time. So
interesting, because I know I never owned the East Front version. I know I owned the West Front version, though. If you ask me where it is, I would not know.
Your son probably knows where it is.
Yeah, I doubt it, because frankly, he's afraid to touch games most days, because if he does, there's like a rule that he has to play it with me.
You probably can't find it because Mrs. O sold it already.
Yeah, right. I doubt that one had that kind of value, because the thing about East Front Tank Leader, unlike West Front, was that John Hill worked on East Front.
BB Mike, we've now hatched a new variation on the plot for Jim and Bismarck. We're going to send Bismarck to his son. That's what
I come home. I come home and discover my son desperately hunting the Bismarck.
There you go. OJ's dad. What's another game in here you want to talk about? What's another one in here you want to poke at?
Oh, Aaron Armor is probably on my short list.
Yeah.
Blue Water Navy.
Atlantic or the Pacific, or both?
You know, honestly, I'd probably look more toward the Pacific to start with, just because it seems more relevant today.
Yeah. Mike is, BB Mike's doing, he just went on mute so he can do a little happy dance. I'll tell you, if that's something that you're interested in terms of things that may be a little relevant today, it just dumb luck that they happen to land next to each other with the way this catalog is sorted. But on the big inside spread right up at the top in the middle, Indian Ocean region and South China Sea are both contemporary games in that area. They're both available now, and they do connect. You can hook them together and play one massive game of the both of them.
Mm-hmm.
So you can push those together. So that one, you know, if the interest is some contemporary stuff, that one may be one, or those two may be something worth considering.
You know, that's another one that I would actually consider, because it is contemporary. And I just said, you know, I'm not really into the more contemporary stuff, but the fact that there's a political component to that, I like to see that kind of thing. So I would have an interest actually in seeing how that works.
Yeah. Anybody that's curious about the political component of those things, the article was diming out in the South China Sea, and it was run earlier this year. Ian, Rocky Mountain Navy, wrote a really good write-up around, hey, here's how the political phase unfolded. Here's how it influenced both sides of the game. And oh crap, this really does change what you're having to deal with.
That's pretty cool.
It's almost sort of like shuffling the deck just to change up your start conditions. But you actually have to sort of play through the changing of those start conditions.
Yeah. I am interested. And like I say, you can't be all things to all people. And I don't know who's pitching what to whom, but it does interest me that it's been a while since I've seen Compass offer a tactical Ancients game, or a medieval game for that matter. I mean, they've obviously got Barbarians at the Gate, which does seem interesting, but I notice they don't have, at least unless I'm missing it, they have absolutely nothing for tactical battles. They don't have a tactical Napoleonic.
Maybe there's just other people doing those things.
Yeah, no, and that could be. I just that's more an observation than anything, I think.
Or a tactical Age of Sail game, now that you mention it.
Oh yeah. I mean, have we ceded the field to flying colors? Is that it?
Perhaps. So
is that what has happened here? I don't know. You know, it's just looking over some of these things to notice the gaps that are there. Because they do have some wonderfully arcane topics, which is cool. And I look, I'm not going to go on a rant. I'm just going to point at it as we drive fast at a high rate of speed. But look, we got bulge games here, guys. You know,
for bulge games, plural,
which is like, okay, very good. Good luck with that. Let me know how it turns out. But nothing, you know, there are interesting omissions, I guess I would say.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Jim.
Oh, yeah. I saw that. I did see that. But
Pontiac's War.
What level is that at?
It's 30 to 50 men, unit scale, 4 to 6 artillery.
Oh, I'm going to have to eat my words. Where I saw that. I can't.
Pontiac's War.
Can't find it now. Oh, with a P, right.
Yeah, P-O-N.
Yeah, but it's seasonal turns.
Yeah.
And it's a point-to-point map.
Right. But it's mounted.
Oh, very good. Oh, and it's solitaire medium only.
No, it says solitaire medium.
Yeah, right. Oh, it's medium. That means that means it's not easy. That means it's hard.
You know, and I'll say Jim is absolutely correct. Wherever they say something like solitaire medium, or you know, that's it's not solitaire medium. I guarantee you, it's solitaire. This is going to take a while to play by myself.
But anyway, going back to Pontiac War, I mean that's cool. I don't much like we observed. They do have the one that was mentioned earlier. They have War for America. And very now again, I like you, Brant. I am drifting away from the Civil War, the American Civil War.
Yeah,
it's not a place that I'm going. So, but if this were Napoleonic, it would be if they were to do something like this Napoleonic, it would be my number one with a bullet. And I would probably be out at the warehouse demanding a copy, or certainly trying to get into the playtest.
Well,
what is the name of it? It's the Gettysburg game, Flanks of Gettysburg. Yeah, it's like that sort of a scale in Napoleonic. Yeah, give it.
Yeah, I was gonna say that's right there with what you want. It's just a topic that you're less interested in.
All what this reminds me most of is the classic the Avalon Hill gamettes. Okay. There's one for Waterloo that was actually done by Kevin Zucker for the 100 Days, but they also had one that I loved so much on Little Round Top.
Yep,
that game.
This is what you're talking about with Napoleonics, though. This is the same thing where if this had been any other battle, if it had been a smaller battle or a more obscure battle, I'd be all over it. But you know, it's just Gettysburg.
That's a good point.
How many times am I going to attack Little Round Top and Culp's Hill? And I'm not saying anything bad about the game. It's probably a fantastic game. I don't know. I'll probably end up ordering it. But give me another battle. Give me something different.
Yeah, and it's also interesting because these are not small battle maps. They're 2234s. So yeah, this is going to be, you know, pretty substantial stuff. That seems like a great opportunity to expand out. No, I agree with you. Some of those games are more tactically interesting than others, or battles, I should say. But,
and maybe they're testing the waters with the more well-known battle, and if this succeeds, then they'll come out with the others.
Well, I don't know. And I would buy that if the Napoleon's Eagles thing hadn't gone exactly the other way. It's like you went for two, not obscure. Borodino's not obscure, for God's sake. Neither is Leipzig, but they're not the meat and potatoes of Napoleonic gaming. Gettysburg is. You know,
keep in mind too, though, that none of these guys are staff designers for Compass, right? It's not like they drive to Compass HQ, clock in, sit down, work on games as assigned by Compass overlords,
right.
And clock out and go home. Like they're bringing to Compass the games in which they are interested in. Now, how much Bill might nudge people in the ribs and go, you know, we could really use a game on this, but you know, versus how much of it is, hey, this is something I'm interested in. I'm going to design one and I'm going to see if I can sell it. I guarantee there is no publishing company on the planet that went, hey, we should really design a solitaire game of the politics inside North Korea. That didn't happen. Somebody was interested in that and came up with No Motherland Without and said, hey, do you want to buy this? And somebody played it and said, hey, this is actually a pretty good game. We should publish this. Like nobody gave someone that homework assignment. Right. That just didn't happen. So when these guys are showing up with Flanks of Gettysburg, when John Paniski is showing up with Flanks of Gettysburg, I doubt that it's possible John said, hey, I got these six games. Which one do you want first? That's possible because John designs a lot of games. So it's entirely possible. But, you know, it's probably, hey, I've got this Gettysburg game. Are you interested in? And if it turns out to be a hit, maybe they come back and go, hey, John, that was really good. You want to give us some more battles? You know, you want to give us Shiloh? You want to give us Chancellorsville? You want to give us something else? You know, that might happen more.
BB, Mike, and I are going to – we get to go sit and hold hands in the corner and agree on something. We're going to sit over here and be a little belligerent with our designers and say, I ain't never designed a game. I ain't never going to design a game. But if you are a designer and you're looking for my money, stretch your horizons a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, stop doing Gettysburg.
Yeah, stop doing even stop doing Waterloo. I love it. I love it to pieces. Come on. I've done an article for this website that took 3 episodes, 10 games each. It's 30 games.
and still missed some. Still had people.
Oh, what? Absolutely did.
What about?
We got a bunch of whatabouts. On a similar point, I've got, you know, we're working our way through 12 different versions of the Battle of Capture Bra for miniatures games. You know, it's this obsession. And come on, there's other stuff, and there'd be interest. The other thing is, and this could be politics, I don't know, I don't want to impute that, I don't know this, but other than Schutztruppe, which is interesting, nothing on the British Empire, nothing in the Age of Empire.
From Compass or from anyone?
From Compass. From okay. This
wouldn't Pontiac's War be part of that, or you think?
That's I suppose chronologically, but I'm talking the European empires.
Okay. Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah. Okay. Well, you know, you were talking about Napoleon games. How about something with the Italian campaigns?
Yes. Yes.
You never hear about that. You know, you hear about the, like you said, the Leipzig, the Borodinos, the Wagrams, the Waterloos, obviously. You hear some about the Peninsula battles.
You know, Mike knows young, all like
Italy. Italy and Egypt were just nothing.
The young teenage Napoleon angst. That's what you want.
You know what? I just want to be able to. I just want to be introduced to something that I'm just not familiar with. And I know people are sitting there, well, just go out and look it up. But seriously, I don't want to do World War II games anymore.
Jim is on the stump for more games about the Battle of Dennewitz. That's what Jim wants.
Well, no, and maybe
Jim wants Dennewitz in 12 different miniature systems.
Well, no, maybe this is where I got this so completely wrong, because a game I truly love, I mean, not from Compass, it's from Legion, another wonderful war game company, is Toulon 1793. It is so freaking good. And it's about a topic that's incredibly important in the Napoleonic Wars, but doesn't, you know, nobody had done a game about it until Legion did. And it's so good. And it's, by the way, an operational game for 2 to 5 players, you know, and it just went into a space. I said, I wanted it just for what it was, but it then turned out it's got such a gorgeous map.
Yeah, and the map on that one is pretty snazzy.
You know, it's exciting. And to Mike's point, it really does. It teaches you about the battle. I had read about Toulon 100 times, but it wasn't until I played it that I went, oh, that's where that is. Got it. I get the problem now. You know, the best stuff. This is why we play war games. So look, I'm not saying don't do Gettysburg. First of all, like you'd listen to me anyway, but
don't do just Gettysburg.
Yeah. Come on. Give me something.
One of the things that I've definitely noticed over the past, I don't know, 2.5 years or so with Compass, but it's definitely happened, seemed to happen maybe a little more lately, and maybe it's just because a bunch of them all hit pre-order at the same time, but also it is noticeable within the catalog here. There are a handful of sort of systems that these guys are going back to the well multiple times with changes in topic, but they're popular and they seem to be selling really well. These solo naval games, you've got Schnellboats, Sensuikon, where was Devil Boats, Dog Boats. There's a whole bunch of these, Atlantic Sentinel, these solo naval games where you're sort of out prowling the high seas, whether chasing submarines around or being a submarine chasing other guys around or protecting from submarines. There's a whole series of those that seem to be getting a lot of positive attention from the audience, and Compass is happily meeting that demand by churning them out. You also have the aerial side of things, Interceptor Ace, America Bomber, Defending America. And so you've got those, the aviation equivalent of those as well, those more narrative solo types of games that all run on essentially the same system. And Compass has put together a way that you can do some of those things opposed. I think it was America Bombers and Defending America that there's a special kit you can get to kind of connect those two together so they can face off and take two solo games and turn them into a two-player game, which is Jim's probably scratching his head and go, why the hell would you do that in the first place? But they've done it.
Accurate.
But those are those take up, you know, 8 or 10 spots on the, you know, this feature grid as OJ's dad described it earlier on these feature items. This is something that there's a bunch of in here that are purpose designed solo ones that kind of live within those systems. And look, man, Compass, if Compass wasn't selling them, they wouldn't keep printing them. And they wouldn't have just dropped 3 new ones on pre-order all within a week of each other in the past month or so to start to start, you know, building up those pre-orders to go to press with them. This is something that sells. People are digging this, and they're playing a bunch of it. And it can't be all BB Mike just buying, you know, 10 copies of each of these. Other people got to be interested in these.
I bought Devil Boats and it was shipped and I never received it. It must have gone to the Arctic Circle or somewhere. And it was my fault because I was in the middle of a move, so I never received it. So Devil Boats, and I think I talked about that one on the last Compass catalog review. I ordered that one I wasn't very enthusiastic about it. Those types of games, I'm a Hex Encounter guy. And when I look at those games, I kind of scratched my head on Devil Boats, and I was really anxious to try it, and I wished I'd received it so I could try it, tell you how it is. But I'm still a little nervous about those types of games, and I'm surprised because I did read reviews on Devil Boats, and they weren't really great reviews of that game. It kind of makes me wonder if that's true. Then why would they drop these other games? I don't know.
I'm always careful when I see people putting out negative reviews of something, because just because it didn't work for you doesn't mean it doesn't work for somebody else.
Well, and I would say that's true if there's one negative review, but there's there were several less than flattering reviews of Devil Boats, and I would still love to try it. So, you know, maybe it'll one day show up at the front door. I don't know.
Wait, are you like dropping hints or something?
Of course.
Yeah.
But if I'm gonna drop hints though, then do send me Napoleon's Imperium, and I will test out the solitaire medium rating that you gave it.
Yeah. I can't fault you for trying, but no.
It'll be a 3-episode special on my own worst enemy, guaranteed.
Yeah, don't hold your breath.
Yeah. Oh, there you go.
What needs to happen is one of you chuckleheads needs to bring it to Origins, and we'll book it as a 5-hour game with 8 seats in it. And
you seriously think that's 5 hours? I do not.
What does it say in here? Battle point game takes 4 to 6 hours.
Much like the solitaire ratings.
Thank you.
Which game were you talking about?
Napoleon's Imperium.
You're going to spend
an hour easy teaching those rules.
And that's being generous. I think it's going to take longer than that.
You know, I thought you were a better teacher than that, Jim.
I'm a very good teacher of rules. Thank you very much. I have witnesses on this very call, but I won't say a perfect teacher, but I'm a pretty good one. On the other hand, it's weird. Board game rules are typically more complex than their tabletop counterparts. You know, I was thinking about games that really, if I were, you know, giving awards for games that really blew my mind, board games that made me go, holy stuff, this is different. Probably my number one is going to be Here I Stand.
Okay.
You took a game about the Reformation and made it incredibly exciting, intensely interesting, and just fun. I've never not enjoyed that game. I've played it with my wife. I've played it with, you know, friends. You talk about a dream I've got for Origins. It would be to have a full table, but I want to get there's a company that makes the giant maps and the giant pieces to do one of those because like Harold Buchanan's got a double-sized version of his AmRev game, and to do one of those. But my point is, you know, that game, when you sit down to teach Here I Stand, I need 2 hours.
Yeah.
Because it's got so many bloody mechanics. They're all, and this crazy thing is, they're insanely simple. There is no part of Here I Stand that approaches the difficulty of the original Squad Leader. None. But there's so many. And I suspect I know because I've read the rules to Napoleon's Imperium that it's much the same. It's not a hard game, but there's a lot there.
Yeah, yeah.
That's all.
So book you for 6 hours at Origin.
There, right.
Is that what I'm hearing? 2 hours?
Because that's, well, I need, and I'm going to need, and I'm going to need an hour on both ends.
For setup and teardown.
For setup and takedown, yeah.
Okay, so Wednesday afternoon, done.
That's done, handled, all good.
Wednesday blocked off. We'll figure out what to do with you the rest of the weekend.
Yeah.
So let's show some love to some of the games we haven't talked about yet, kind of going through the list here. We did hit 1812. That is one that BB Mike is definitely interested in. And so the War on the Great Lakes Frontier, Mike and I both said not interested in 2040, just not a topic that really gets me all that jazz these days, probably for very similar reasons. Mike, Jim, I don't see either of you being particularly interested in 2040 either.
Oh, no.
You know, look, for the designer's sake, I hope it's a success. I hope the designer, you know, finds an audience for this and that they really enjoy the game, because I want people to be able to find the game they like. And so if that's something that scratches your itch, man, go for it.
I will say kudos to Compass, though, for maybe going out on a bit of a limb with that one.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Based off the topic, right?
Yep. Oh, that's out there. Definitely out there. And I will say, more than many other publishers, Compass seems to just sort of shrug if somebody says, you know, maybe that's not the best approach to take to this. Compass just says, okay, fine, don't buy it. And they sort of shrug and make it anyway. Whether they're nuts or just don't care, you know, probably equal measure. But to their credit, they will push those games out anyway. So, you know, more power to them. Aaron Armour, we already mentioned. Alexandros and Spartacus, we have not mentioned at all yet. These are some games from Command Magazine that are being re-implemented by Compass. Any thoughts on those guys at all? Jim, Mike, anything?
Regrettably nothing. I mean, it tries to tell me what it is, but when the unit scale is at legions, I guess I don't know.
Yeah.
And the map scale is strategic.
Well, and it's two games in one.
Yeah.
Because you look at the time scale, one's at seasonal and one's at monthly.
Right.
So.
All right. We talked American Tank Ace. Atlantic Sentinel is one of those solo sort of chip movement. It reminds me of some of those choose your own adventure style RPGs almost, right? It's sort of a solo hex crawl, if you will. And again, look, people seem to like these things because they keep making them. Barbarians of the Gates. BB Mike, any thoughts here? It's got a mod, so you would think Jim would be interested. So,
unit scale, 5,000 to 10,000 troops.
Yeah.
Final
point to point. See, it's point. Point to point maps don't do it for me either. So yeah,
I didn't say it when we went there the first time, but I'm affirmed. It's weird because I just said how much I love Here I Stand, which has a point to point map.
Yes.
They generally give me the itch.
and there are good point to point games out there. Yeah. It's just, there's something about the point to point. I don't know what it is.
Yeah. I enjoyed Crusader Rex quite a bit with its point to pointness. It always, look, I'm a bit of a maneuverist. Like, that's why I love driving tanks around and blowing stuff up. So, you know, being that constrained can sometimes feel a little wonky. But I get why some people do like them. You know, why have to throw the hex grid over the mountains that you can't move through anyway? Let's just put them out of play and call it good enough.
I will point out for one of our esteemed forum members that Barbarians of the Gates does include 2.5 counter sheets with rounded corners. So that's something.
Yes. That's one of the innovations, because we're not animals. We don't leave our counters uncut.
As a side note, I know you guys will pop into Gary's counter clipping stream on a regular basis on Monday nights. Have you seen Gary released the counter clipping ASMR video?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Sure.
That was such an amusement there. Battle Hymn Volume 2. So there was a Volume 1 with some Civil War games. There's your Volume 2 with some additional Civil War games. And Mike, these are a little off the beaten path. You get Shiloh and Bentonville in Battle Hymn Volume 2 there.
This is the follow-up to Cross 5 Aprils. So I do own Volume 1 and probably will get Volume 2. So there is that.
That's cute, you saying probably, like we're actually doubting this or something. All right, we've talked about Bismarck plenty. Brothers at War, again, not one that's in my wheelhouse, but hey, Mike, you got some different battles here, right? Fox's Gap, Mill Springs, this is stuff that's not, you know, Gettysburg and Shiloh and Chancellorsville. So you do have something a little different here.
I'll have to put that in the cart and look at it as well, yeah.
This is going to be like that podcast where you end up like ordering five things off the air, isn't it?
Like Jim said, I'm sitting here marking the things. I'm going to go back and agonize.
There you go.
That's the whole point of this episode. That's what the audience is busy doing as well. Blue Water Navy and Blue Water Navy 2. So look, Blue Water Navy was very well received. People really liked it. It has obvious comparisons to the Fleet series. The original one was the Battle of the Atlantic. The upcoming one's Battle of the Pacific. I'm not sure we need to cover much more than that, unless, like, OJ's dad, you got anything you wanted to add there?
Nope.
All right. Moving on. Perry Battles, Philippine Sea. We already know that BB Mike is bribing the guys at the printing press to airmail him a copy as soon as it comes off. Coalition. Jim, we hadn't talked about Coalition at all this year. It's got a mounted map. It's Napoleonics, and it's a mounted map.
It's a Euro game.
Okay, so too high level for you?
Not a war game.
It isn't.
Just but isn't. It's just a war game publisher.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Well, I guess we're moving on. So there's Combat and Combat 2, and for folks that want a very granular, super tactical World War II system, this is your game. This is man-to-man stuff. This is, Jim, I don't think it's a perfect air to sniper, but it's pretty darn close.
Combat?
You don't think?
You mean other than the fact that it's a solitaire game? Yeah, you did you just, now you're going to make me crabby. Did you just, on this podcast, compare one of the great Kriegspiel-esque games ever done, double blind sniper, to a solitaire game? You did not.
You have no idea what the enemy is doing when you're playing solitaire, do you? Cradle of Civilization. Sean Chick, and Sean roped Daniel Chick into working with him. Anybody got any thoughts on Cradle of Civilization here? Jim's still stewing over my game.
You're okay.
You think so? Is that where?
Of course it is.
Is that where you're falling on this one?
Yeah. First rule of work of cross examination. Don't ask a question you don't know the answer to.
I'm asking all kinds of questions. I'm letting you guys answer.
All right.
Crusade and Revolution digs into the Spanish Civil War. This one's actually already out.
Yeah. So
you guys
it's been well received. Not my particular period, but a really, really important period, truthfully, and one that deserves coverage. I everything I've seen suggests that those who have it have enjoyed it.
Yeah. Something that I've seen just totally anecdotally, but I've seen a variety of Spanish Civil War games that get released to decent critical acclaim and never seem to last for too long with any one publisher, right? Alas Barracadas is on like its third publisher now, where it's bounced around the one from the Warstorm series that the guys over in Europe have put together. I think Draco Ideas has it now, but it's been published by like three different people. I don't know that Crusade and Revolution was ever published first by someone else. Totally wouldn't surprise me if that was the case. But it seems to be one of those things where some Spanish Civil War games, well-received, but just can't hold on commercially to any real foothold out there. I could be completely wrong on this. This just seems to be what I've noticed with game releases over the years. Death in the Trenches, BB Mike already mentioned. Defending America is part of that aerial solo narrative story game kind of piece there. Devil Boats, you're doing it on the water. I'm curious, so BB Mike, you had mentioned Devil Boats, hadn't seen a ton of great reviews there. Is part of the issue basically that it's your job to just sit there and be a target for everybody? Is that
I think that was one of the criticisms, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's when you're a target goalie, it's tough to really find too much enjoyment in that. But I think it's different in its fundamental design from something like Dog Boats or Atlantic Sentinel or, you know, in any of those other the more, I guess, mobile naval games, if you will. You know, it's not a tower defense kind of naval game.
Well, there. Is it? Am I understanding this right, Mike? In that, what it is you're actually have a layout of your boat that you're manning.
Yeah,
is that what this
is? And you manage the crew as well. And
yeah.
But it's not U-boat, right? I mean, you're not worried about
worker placement game.
People's pork chops in the fridge. You're actually shooting people for, you know, and being shot at is kind of the point of the game. So
you do that in U-boat.
You don't have to.
True.
So
would love to have tried it. I don't know. Who knows? Maybe one day.
All right, the Eastern Front Operational Battles Quad. So we're going back to quad land here. Brief Border Wars is a quad. This, you know, look, if you're an East Front kind of guy, this is probably your thing, isn't it?
Sure.
Yeah. It appears to be going back to the old SPI quad well there again. John Butterfield's Enemy Action series, we hadn't really talked about them. I don't know as really too many people have much bad to say about either of the Enemy Action games other than, oh my God, they're expensive. I mean, you know, look, Ardennes is on sale right now for $109. That's the special price. That's the sale price for a game that's designed for solitaire play. although there is a two-player variant. So Jim, you can safely purchase enemy action Ardennes.
Yeah, I would.
Let me rush out there and buy a bulge game. I'll do that.
I would say it's hard to complain about the price too, because I'm just looking at what comes with that, and there's quite a bit in there for what you're getting. I mean, I'm not going to get it, but it looks like there's a lot in there for the price.
There is a lot in there. There is a lot in there for it. It's a lot for any kind of game, much less that's a lot for a solo game. All right, let's rattle our catalogs around and work our way through the inside here. We hadn't talked about For Motherland at all. This one's kind of interesting. This is an East Front game with an Asian designer. Any thoughts here, guys? Too high level to be of interest, or is it because it's East Front and therefore so what?
You're absolutely asking the wrong guy here.
For me, it's not the Pacific, so that lets me out. I am intrigued that it is an Asian designer. That, you know, maybe a different perspective. That would be interesting. But yeah, it's not in the Pacific, so.
Yeah, I don't know who Masahiro Yamazaki is. The name, I'm guessing, is Japanese, but I would be guessing at that. Not someone I know, but, you know, hey, kudos to Compass for giving a different designer a chance at, you know, getting their game out there for folks. So, you know, good on them for that. We talked Granada. Hearts and Minds. We're going back to, I love the description on this. And
this is what's confusing the pants off me. Do I own this game? Is there a more recent version? Is this the one with the absurdly large dice?
So there was also Vietnam Rumor of War.
No, Hearts and Minds.
Okay, so there were two different games out there with the Hearts and Minds name on it. And hang on just a second, and I will see if I can't demystify there.
Why are we not fighting about this? Why is this not being solved?
Sorry, I'm loading the thing now. So there was the strategic card-driven game, and then there's this one. Let's go see.
No, I've got the Compass version. Okay.
Yeah, so there was a Worthington version.
Yeah, but the Worthington version got taken over to Compass because...
Yes.
I've got this one. This has the two largest dice in the history of games for reasons that utterly... I put them on Twitter. They were so big.
Yeah.
I like it. It's a good game. I thought it was a blast. It's it is, you know, if you're going to do Vietnam, you want to do the one that GMT is putting out. I mean, you want to do the real Vietnam thing. But for a lighter, it falls nicely on a spectrum, I would say. At the far end, you've got the victory game that's being rebooted by GMT. On the other end is this one, and somewhere in the middle is Fire in the Lake.
Yeah, the idea that somewhere in the middle is Fire in the Lake just sort of scares me for the one that's on the more complicated scale.
Yeah, that game is not a joke. I love that game. I have played that game. I have played Vietnam 65-75 three times. The campaign game in my life. I don't know as I ever will again.
Yeah.
But it's inexperience, and I am tempted to the GMT game. But no, this Hearts and Minds game, if that's the one I got, and I think it is, I like it.
I think this is, yeah. I do love the description in here. Is an uncomplicated approach to the Vietnam War. Westmoreland never had it so good.
And that's accurate. That's accurate. It ain't complicated. It's you know, now that I think about it, it's kind of similar to the great card-driven board game Age of Napoleon. They have the same basic weight and feel to them, and I'm very fond of them both.
Hitler's Last Gamble. Hey, look, it's a bulge game.
Bulge game.
All right. Indian Ocean region, we've already talked about, you know, being able to connect that with South China Sea. Interceptor Ace is another one of those aerial solo games. Guys, if y'all want to talk about any of those, stop me as I'm working our way through the list here. Imperial Tide, we already talked about. Kharkov Battles. So this is a slight revision of an existing game, but is already out there now. I do love the component descriptions. Two maps, one smaller map. Boys and girls, when two maps come together and they map each other very much.
And love each other very much.
Contact Now Red Eclipse, we discussed quite a bit. The Manassas Designer Signature Edition, the original tactical Civil War simulation for two or more players covering First Battle of Manassas. Is this one that anybody's jumping up and down for?
Probably not here.
I've discussed my
if I was going to get a Civil War one, that one may be actually interesting just because it's tactical and battle that you're not
true.
It's not Gettysburg, right? And it looks like it's a true tactical game.
Wait, I've got Brief Border Wars. Time out. I need to go back. this is the curse of the war gamer. No. I've got Brief Border Wars. It's awesome. Liked it.
We had
why do you not have it? I would have thought this would be right in your wheelhouse.
We haven't even mentioned Brief Border Wars yet.
Didn't you? The quad?
No, the quad we were talking about was the Eastern Front quad.
That's why I was confused. Okay, go on. Never mind.
Brief Border Wars is on the outside of the catalog in one of the linear ones. That's the one that I mentioned at the start of the whole podcast that I've got on pre-order. Not on pre-order. I've got it on order over at Gamers Armory that I'm just waiting for it to come into my FLGS.
Okay, I was like, how do you not have this? Okay, very good.
The reason I don't have it is when the damn thing was released, I was between jobs.
Oh, dig it. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
No, because I will tell you, I bought it exclusively, and I like the other games. The other games in it are good. It's four games. The game I bought it for was Operation Attila, because there are not too much. I won't say the only, because that would be stupid, but it is on a very short list of games covering the Cypriot crisis.
Yeah, not a lot.
Back over to Manassas real quick. It's also probably one of the few games that I've seen on here that's designed for two or more players.
Yep.
Specifically,
that makes it better.
You can either be the Union, the Confederates, or the ladies having lunch watching the battle up on the hill.
Yes, that's an option.
They get chased away.
Which allows you to stand up there and say boo.
Yeah. We talked quite a bit about Maori last year, as I recall. This is one of those, you know, kind of like No Motherland Without. If this is your topic, then this is your game. I suggest
you buy it now.
But this almost strikes me as sort of more a 4X-y kind of thing than a true ended war. All right, we've talked about everything with Napoleon in the title already. We've talked NATO. We've talked No Motherland Without. Operation 333, we hadn't even mentioned. Chris Davis is a phenomenally interesting dude who has a lot of very neat design ideas out there. And I'm curious to see how this one comes to fruition, because I had seen some of the early playtest pieces of this that he has shared online on social media. And so I'm curious to see what comes out of this once it actually goes through a full development cycle, and then and then lands on people's tables. Chris is a smart dude, so it'll be neat to see what comes out of this. It, definitely right in the heart of the Cold War there, but yeah, Chris does a lot of solitaire design, so it's not a surprise that this one is designed for solitaire play. Operation Crusader. So here's the big question in all of this. Is this the GDW double blind thing being reincarnated? Because it is Frank. Or is this some other Crusader game that, because look, the term Operation Crusader, that was the name of the operation in North Africa. You're obviously going to use that for a game about those battles.
I'm wondering if it's the double blind one, because it says no more pre-plotting movement.
Yeah. So, And it's saying, you know, for players, two or more, best with two, team play possible. So, Jim, does this become your Kriegsspiel in World War II that we're going to see at Origins 2024?
Why is it got to be in the freaking desert?
Yeah. Well, let me tell you, it's in the desert because the artist was already overcommitted to too many other projects, and turning out a desert map is fairly easy. Paint it all beige, call it good enough. No?
Yeah, no, I agree.
I'll say that if you want to see a really nice-looking desert map, go get Lock and Load's Toten Sontag. It's the desert. It's a Rommel game in North Africa, but, man, that map is a good-looking desert map. All right, back to the catalog. We talked about Pacific Tide already. If you want to read a review, we've got one on our site. Panzerkrieg. We had not even mentioned Panzerkrieg. Probably don't need to, because it's not even due in until late 2023. So, do we want to just wait and talk about this in the next two catalog years that we come back to?
There you go.
Yep.
Pontiac's War. Mike's already got it on pre-order, right? Is that how this is working? BB Mike's not. He dozed off on us.
Well, I didn't realize which Mike you were referring to.
Yeah, I keep forgetting there's more than one of you. Prelude to Revolution. What do we think, guys? It's a matter of map, but the Russia's descent into anarchy. What do we think here, guys?
It's got a cloth bag.
Honestly, I haven't looked at it, so I don't know.
Yeah,
that's good. That's I would agree with that. Yep.
Agree. I got to be circumspect. I got nothing there.
All right. No peace without honor. So Jim, I'm sure your buddy Doug is probably all over this, huh?
Well, yeah, I mean, Lace Wars is underserved. I mean, let's not dispute that, right?
Compared to the Midways and Bulges and Waterloos and Gettysburgs of the world, certainly. It does seem as though there are more and more games on these topics showing up these days than there might have ever been at any other point in wargaming history.
Well, I think that's true of all wargame periods, right? I think this is the rising tide lifting all boats. You know, you sell enough bulge games and people will take a risk on your Maori wargame.
There's still only been one internal North Korean politics game.
And that's it. Yeah, there you go.
Roma Victrix, recreate the conflicts between Rome and her neighbors to achieve and maintain that dominance. It's one turn on an area movement map.
Do you want me to say it?
Do not use the E word. Do not use the E word.
I was going to say it. I was asking. Okay, the man said I'm not supposed to use it. I'm being nice because Mike is being nice to me.
All right, the Russia campaign we talked about earlier. Look, this is a reimplementation of a seminal game that's been reprinted 6 or 8 different times from different publishers. It is a classic of our hobby. And if that's something that appeals to you, go dig into it, because this is a common frame of reference for a lot of people our age and older. And there's nothing wrong with that. If that's a period of interest that you've got, it's not mine. But don't let that stop you. The Russia Besieged Finnish expansion. So they had to release this one in order to finish the game. We've got Schnellboats, Sensuikon, you know, Silent War Deluxe Edition. Again, these are all more of those solitaire war at sea kinds of things. Schutztruppe, OJ's dad. This is your shtick, isn't it?
Yep. Have it on pre-order.
Have you dug into any of the other games in that time period at all, just to end up having a basis of comparison out there somewhere? Because I know there was at least one and maybe two magazine games in the last couple of years.
No, I haven't
as well. So yeah. I know magazine games can be wildly unpredictable in terms of how good they are. I just wasn't sure how much you might have dug into it beyond throwing this one on pre-order. Sniper Hill confirmed. Jim's already been on his rant. Do you need to rant anymore there, Jim?
Oh, just disappointed. I think it looks really cool. Very all interesting.
Right. Spitfire Ace. This is going back to Greg Smith's Ace series. Anybody got any thoughts on that series as a whole? Well, folks that dig it really dig it, and folks that don't probably kind of wonder what the hype is, huh?
What kind of game is it?
Yeah. Stellar Horizons. Let's go explore the solar system. We talked about that one some.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Saint-Lieu from Joe Balkowski. Look. Joe is all over this damn catalog, isn't he?
Oh, yes.
Quite a bit. Joe is a prolific dude, and look, God bless him. Like, folks really dig his stuff. I did find it interesting that the map scale on this one is 306 yards per hex.
You wonder what happened with those 6 yards.
You know?
And you know what? Joe, because of he is who he is, he'd tell you. He knows.
Oh, I guarantee he knows. So it's 306 yards because the range of this particular mortar was 300 yards.
Yeah,
exactly. So that way it only has a one hex range and I don't have to do multi-hex ranges.
Or whatever. There you go.
It'll be an explanation like that, not that that's the actual explanation.
It'll still scale into Tabletop Simulator, no problem.
Then you darn Skippy.
as long as Jim doesn't accidentally multiply by 2, we'll be fine.
Shut it.
All right. Now, to be fair, he only did that with the table. Not the units.
Yeah. Test of Faith. Adam Starkweather's at it again with another operational scale series game. We didn't really talk about this so much, but this takes the same system as the Doomsday Project, throws it into the Arab-Israeli Wars. And so it'll be interesting to see what comes out of that. We've got some time till we get around to it. I am curious what F5 counter sheets are, if that's 5 full-size counter sheets or if the F is a typo. But I am sort of curious what F5 counter sheets are. Africa campaign. But these designer signature editions, like, this is them bringing back older games and sort of updating and republishing them.
Yeah, no, I own the African campaign. I not to be confused with the campaign for North Africa. This is one that I,
Let's face it, right?
This is one that causes me to laugh only because I don't see the need. But yeah. But if somebody doesn't own it, Mel, maybe this is their chance to put their hands on it. I just think there are better games now in this space. It's kind of the way I feel. Although for some reason, Russia Campaign is so special that I want to see what happens there. But you know, the Campaign for North Africa was never that special. I'm just curious to know what this brings that a number of other games that are already out in this space do better. And frankly, if I'm going to play a North Africa campaign, it's going to be Desert Fox by Columbia, but that's me.
Yeah. Battle for Armageddon is, you know, this one's out. This one has got some well-respected voices in the hobby have said, hey, this is a really neat game and you need to give it a chance because it does mix up some concepts that a lot of wargamers take for granted. So don't let that put you off from really digging into this and taking a new, fresher look at some classic wargame mechanics. But I think there are other folks that just wanted to go ahead and start pushing counters around and blow stuff up that were really put off by the fact that it does take some of those wargame conventions and kind of put them in a blender. So never mind the topic itself, which already sort of gave some people the willies. The way in which Kerry Anderson approached certain things, I think, sort of gave people the willies also.
Ooh, I hate the willies.
Conquistadors, we talked about this quite a bit last year on the podcast, like partly card driven, partly procedural, but the whole point was to go conquistadoring. And Jim, one of y'all probably has the original product listing right there in front of you. I'm curious how much, if at all, the text on this game changed from what we read last year. Because Jim, I remember you making the point that it's not just about exploring and, you know, trying to find your conquistadoring. And
right.
I think it did change, right? This isn't
sound it's saying right. Trying to discover and loot the civilizations of the Americas. we're not sugarcoating things this time around.
It has changed.
Yeah. What was the text a year ago?
So a year ago it says put you in charge of a group of conquistadors competing against other conquistadors to bring home the most gold in this partly card driven, partly procedural game. You will seek out and discover the great Indian cities and empires.
it's like, guys, yeah, you know,
you filed the rough edges off of that.
There you go. You have filed the hell off those rough edges.
This year, I think they're being a little more intellectually honest with discover and loot the civilizations of the Americas. Like, we're not sugarcoating this crap this time around, guys.
That's kind of great.
I really hope that they're. That change was not as a result of anything we said, because that would really give us a far inflated sense of our own importance.
I think in many ways we can't be the only persons who mention that to them.
Yeah. Yeah. I would hope not. We talked Doomsday Project, you know, episode one's out now. The Balkans are coming. Enemy at the Gates is one that I called out as I'm interested in. Fall of Tobruk. We're going back to North Africa. Jim, you signing up for it?
Nah, I'm going to be over here playing Desert Fox. You give me a call.
Korean War, so again.
This is one. I almost wonder if I don't have to own it because I kind of want to own the Vietnam one and I want to own this one. I own them both.
This is one that you mentioned, Jim, last time. And because of the way you talked about this last time, I bought this game.
And what'd you think of it? Is this out?
Yeah.
Yes, it's already out. I have it. It's a monster. It's huge, but it's everything you described and more, I think.
Yeah. No. It's this in Vietnam where there's the twin, you know, they came out with Vietnam. It was a huge by Victory Game standard success. And so they put this out, which was more of an incomplete game. I'm very curious to know if they knitted up some of the problems. Now I got to pull down the rule book and look at it.
No, here's one thing that I will caution you on, and somebody will get mad at us for pointing this out later. But this is one for which there were no small number of copies with production issues, with counters that were miscut, with problems with actual production copies that came out and was exacerbated by some not particularly polite responses from Compass when people were asking about, hey, what's up with the production values. So, so just be careful with this one. If you get it new in shrink, that might not be a good thing. You might want to get one that's already been opened so that you can see that, that everything is intact and all of the cuts and markings and everything else are in the places they're supposed to be. Well, I don't think this is something that is pervasive across.
The next sound you hear is Mike rummaging on his shelf.
Yes, it is. I'm like, wait a minute, what did you hear? Because I looked at it, but
yeah, I don't want to impugn Compass's production across the board. That's not what I'm trying to do. I just know that there were some issues with this specific game that bubbled up quite frequently and prominently on social media when the first copy started getting to people's hands. Hmm. So all I'm saying for that one is just be careful. And I don't think that necessarily applies to anything else we're talking about in this catalog. Lamps are going out really well received the first time around. This is second edition. So that there's some rules cleanup. They've incorporated the errata and the FAQs and things. This was one that was really popular the first time around when it first came out. You know, high strategic level World War One, but it's the kind of game that sort of made World War One accessible. And I think that's one of the things that a lot of people liked about it is that we could do a lot of World War One without getting bogged down like they did in World War One. So that, has that going for it. Late unpleasantness, I don't care about. Some of y'all might, Third World War, we already talked about some. I'm surprised nobody brought up the Troubles before now.
Yeah, it is almost out of character for Compass. It's a strange alternative, purely, well, I suppose there's military things happening in it. It's a fascinating period. I don't know if I'm going to find space for it myself, but that's, you know, big, big hat off to them. And thanks for mentioning it, Brent, because I did notice that one. Big hat off for them for taking that topic up. I think it's important.
So here's what I'll say. When you say it's sort of out of character for Compass, I think in terms of rules and you know, the approach to a game that's not just, you know, hex and counter and blowing shit up and lots of kinetic warfare, you're right, that is a little out of character. I think in terms of potentially controversial hot potato topic, that's right there within what Compass is perfectly happy doing.
Yes.
Right? These are the guys with 2040 and Conquistadors, and why not add the Troubles to the stack also?
It's true. I mean, it's as someone who has been on the outside of the Troubles issues, I mean, I lived a lot of it in the 80s when it was much more intense, but yeah, to take up that topic, you're right. That's a bit of a third rail for some.
Yeah, I think they're the guys to take up that topic as much as anyone else in our hobby. They're the ones that would have just said, we don't care what you guys think. We're going to do this because it looks interesting. And the guy.
Well, there. I will say this: the company that gave us Brotherhood and Unity.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. There's another one that we should have thrown on that stack of potentially third rail kinds of games. God bless them. Compass doesn't care what you think. They give zero bleeps what you think about the topics they're going to publish. And if they've got a good game there, they're going to push it out. And that's, you know, to their credit. I don't have an issue with them choosing.
As someone who is profoundly unsympathetic to the argument, oh, you shouldn't cover this topic in a war game. It ultimately comes down to me. Is it a good game?
Yeah.
Did you succeed or fail? It's the only standard that matters.
And is it a game I'm interested in, you know?
Well, no, but I mean, that's stipulated, right? But that's true of the least controversial. That's true of some game that nobody cares one little lick about, right?
Yeah.
I'm saying I'm Speaking utterly...
Games nobody cares one little lick about. Traitors of the Air is next.
Can I say that you worried about this one, Mike?
Bob. Steampunk Bob.
Yeah, we should all chip in and have this shipped to Bob. That's a good
There point. You go. Euro.
So Aardwolf
well, had Bob's a copy. Euro.
True. No, he's not. Brexit.
Not anymore.
Oh, that's right. I forgot. Darn
he's
it.
Brexited.
Aardwolf had a copy of Traitors of the Air that he graciously donated to the prize box this year for Origins. And the gentleman who ended up with it out of the raffle draw was very happy to have ended up with it. So we're glad we were able to find it a good home.
All right.
War for America. BB Mike's all over this one. Western Front Ace. Again, we're back to, you know, that Ace series of solo aerial combat games. The War, both Europe and Pacific. BB Mike, how many copies of The War Pacific do you already have?
I have one of The War Europe and one of The War Pacific. And my dream is to one day play the entirety of World War II on the table. That's my dream.
Well,
is that the game to do it with?
That's the question. Which system will I choose? And I have many to choose from.
Yeah, yes, you do. Yeah, all the way from Axis and Allies on up to, Unconditional Surrender.
You know, Jim, I'm thinking about asking my players which one they would prefer.
Ooh.
stepping into the House of Mirrors again, are we?
Yeah. Hey, me, what do you think?
Hello, me, it's me again.
All right, Victory at Sea. Is there anyone on this call that did not play the original version of Victory at Sea at some point in their lives? I didn't think so. We've covered all of the featured stuff there, guys. Is there anything in those the sort of linear line item only listings that you're interested in? Is there anything out there that is worth calling out without just sort of like running through literally every single one of these?
Well, I already mentioned Fatal Alliances.
You did.
Somebody mentioned Jacobite, Command & Colors Jacobite.
Yeah, I to me...
Jacobite, I should say.
Yeah, Jacobite. I would add, you know, $64 for Jacobite. Stealing, people. Stealing.
Yeah, so there's Jacobite and Tricorn, so there's a pair of...
That is a case, and I don't say this very much. That is a case where Compass put GMT to shame in terms of component quality. I know my Commands and Colors. Trust me on this. And I am deeply envious that Jacobite got a much better treatment. That Tricorn particularly, but Jacobite also got a much better treatment than Napoleonics did from GMT.
When you're talking about the components, are you talking about map art, card art, counter
everything,
art?
Everything.
Wood blocks or wood blocks, I wouldn't think.
No, that's here. Untrue. That is untrue.
Then tell us.
When you have stickered that damnedly many blocks, you start to get a sense for what a good quality block is. And the blocks in Tricorn are better.
Okay.
Smoother.
Wow. And now you have disappointed me because I only own Command & Colors Tricorn. And, you know, now if I have to go in and sticker some worse blocks, that's going to be...
Yeah, but the big one is, though, it's the terrain tiles. That's what bugs me the most. Mm. Those terrain tiles are so nice in Tricorn.
Just buy some extras and use them for Napoleonics.
I have heard the dice are a lot nicer in Tricorn than the others. The dice are actually engraved.
Well, no, they're all the stickered dice. Or are they?
No, in Tricorn, they're engraved. They're not.
Oh, that's right. They're the engraved dice. Yeah, we got stuck with the sticker dice. Here's the thing. I typically obviously play online, as Mike will tell you, and as OJ will tell you. And the deal is, when I play on the tabletop, I was up late one night, and somebody was blowing out 40 sets of these lovely paint or inlaid wooden laser cut. They were laser cut. Laser cut wooden dice for Napoleonics. I bought, I think, 5 sets. And so I will never go back to those junky stickered GMT dice. That's right. They did the really nice dice for Yeah, like I said, everything. I'm just looking at the map. The map is nicer. The train tiles are nicer. The blocks are nicer. The dice are nicer. Well done, Compass. And at $64, you're stealing. It's a great game. Get it.
Just, you know, other games to note, working our way through there. This is where Napoleon's Eagles 1 shows up, although it didn't have the 1 on the name originally.
Because they didn't know yet, right?
Exactly. And as we work our way a little further down, I mean, there are some good deals in here. War in the Wind, our buddy Banzai Cat had reviewed that one at a previous location and liked the game quite a bit. That one's only $37. That's a decent price for a quality game about something you've probably never futzed with. You know, this is a U.S. amphibious invasion in Alaska in World War II. And no, I did not make that up. Brief Border Wars I've got on pre-order. We mentioned that one. Brotherhood and Unity, Jim, you talked about. Look, they're not ones to shy away from some controversial topics. And if you're curious about Brotherhood and Unity, we got an article about it on the site. So, you know, go check that out. I will say, you know, there's a couple of Paper Wars magazine issues that, you know, with some of the cheaper prices on there, I might go take a look at. One of the first ones, OJ's dad, that Setting Sun, Rising Sun, the Russo-Japanese War, $31, man.
Yeah.
That's something that you know, I would have expected would have at least raised an eyebrow from you. Don't know if that's necessarily where you're going there, but an option out there. Jim, I do need to ask, because I'm not familiar with it. If you look on the Paper Wars listing, issue number 93,
mm-hmm.
I'm curious where the Battle of Rogum is.
Hang on a second. I'm going through the Compass website thinking about buying things.
Aren't we all?
Well, yeah. That's why we're here. I'm certainly making a list. How's that?
OJ's dad. Do you?
Oh yeah, no. You know what? You know what though? I remember this now. They didn't. This was screwed up last year.
Yeah, that's why I wanted to ask.
They had the same error. Guys, come on, guys. It's a good game. I've got it. Of course, duh. I've got it in Pitt's War, which is right before it. But yeah, that should have been fixed.
I happen to see that one. That's why I was curious. I am kind of interested. It's one of those, am I interested enough to actually get it? Issue 101, Case Geld, The Axis Invasion of North America, 45-46. It's one of those ones that I kind of, it's almost like, you know, going slow past the car wreck. Like, I want to get it because I kind of want to see what happens, but I kind of don't want to see what happens. It's like the,
if you ever played a game
with a hand over your face looking through your fingers, it would be that, you know?
If I was going to do a World War II game, I'd want to do something like that just because it's different. Yes. You know? It's not another Stalingrad. It's not another Bulge or Normandy or...
Yeah, it's a second cousin of Mississippi Banzai there. Let's be honest with the audience here. All right, guys, how many games have you ordered during the recording of this podcast? Maybe Mike?
I've ordered none, but gosh, I've circled so many.
Does it count if it's in my shopping cart?
Yeah, so Jim, how many are in the cart?
Five.
OJ's dad, any?
None, but I'll caveat that because I just put down a $500 deposit for my daughter's wedding for...
Oh, good Lord.
So you can get that back. You can still get that back.
Yeah. It's just a deposit.
Yeah.
I'll priorities.
My daughter will have no qualms about coming to visit you, Mike.
Just get her Traders of the Air instead. She'll be happier.
What a fine way to greet that new husband.
I try to get her to elope, and she wouldn't do it.
Now, I was going to say, plane tickets to Vegas got to be cheaper than $500 these days.
You got to be close to a courthouse where you live.
I will tell you, so I didn't put any in the cart, but that's also because I'm the recording computer here, and so I'm trying to stay off of other things online so as not to mess up the recording while I'm recording here. But yeah, there are definitely a couple of these that I'm kind of circling. We've talked about it plenty. I am fortunate in that I've got a really good local war game store here. And so more often than not, things that I see through catalogs like this, my first stop is to check with them to see if they can get it, particularly if it's already in print. And if they can't, then I start ordering from the company or ordering online. Compass is ending up with my money one way or the other. It's just if I can filter some of it through the local game store here, then my local game store gets to survive a little longer. And I want those guys to be around for a while. So I try to help them out, which is why my copy of Brief Border Wars is coming that way. Overall, what do we think of this year's catalog? Jim, what do you think?
It's not as meaty as I would like. I admit it feels like, and maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it's just maybe this is confirmation bias. It feels like they're getting bitten by the problems of the world in terms of its shipping and its supplying and its printing. But there are an awful lot of games in there that are worth having. And I want to say, I think that makes me kind of a spoiled baby. I really do feel that way sometimes because it's like, dude, you were raised in the era of SPI. Did you have a cool catalog like this? Were you able to go to a website and click on all the games and make a wish list? No, you did. You could not. So how about you shut up and enjoy what you have? And so I'm going to do that.
OJ's dad, what do you think? Overall impressions of the catalog this year?
Very good. I liked it a lot. Just the fact being able to sit down with it, something physical for a change.
Yeah.
And not just clicking through web pages.
Yeah, definitely. BB Mike,
I love it. I love getting this catalog every year, and like Jim said, you can you think you know what's out there, but you flip through this, I guarantee you're going to find something that you haven't heard of, and it's you're going to take a look at it. I like what they're trying to do. If you've noticed this year, it looks like they've changed the formatting a little bit. I like that they put when you can expect to receive the game. You're not going to get it you know, they're not saying this year you're going to get it at first of the year like they did last time. It looks like a little more honest with shipping on this one, which is good. Yeah. If I had one complaint, it would be with, I think, the solitaire ratings. And I think, and it's not, and I'm not talking about the level, you know, where they have solitaire medium. I'm talking more about where they have in red, it'll say solitaire, designed for solitaire play or something special about solitaire play. I think they're, and I know they're trying to push the solitaire stuff because it's hot right now, but I think some of this doesn't quite fit the games that it's tacked to, if that's the proper way to say that. But overall, yeah, fantastic catalog.
Yeah, I think there's a couple of places where it almost feels like they're overselling the solitaire setting one way or the other.
And it's not just Compass. It's not just Compass doing this.
I'm talking about the layout in the catalog where it's sort of, you see the game title, and because of the color and sizing and positioning, it's like the solitaire info almost jumps out as a little too large.
And that's my complaint. And so, and my fear is that people like Jim will see it and not realize that, you know, this is not strictly a solitaire game. Keep reading.
Yeah. There is that. I will say, you know, that, look, I'm an editor by background. There's some typos floating around in there that just sort of make me scratch my head a little bit.
You really should fix a typo from a year ago.
Yeah. Not just a typo from a year ago, but a typo that was called out on a podcast from a year ago.
That'd be said.
You know, that was prominently notified already a year ago. I want to second a comment that OJ's dad made a few minutes ago, and that is, What's really cool about this is you've got it all out there in front of you, and even something that might not have necessarily caught your eye might catch your eye. When you're looking for something on a website, it's very easy to sort and filter and categorize and just sort of live within that little bubble of your primary interests and never see the other things. Whereas when you've got them all arrayed in front of you, you're going to find other stuff that may catch your eye and be of interest and go, oh, hey, wow, that sounds kind of cool. I should check that out. And that's, you know, what possible set of categorization filters when looking through a game listing online are you going to end up with serendipitously coming across No Motherland Without? You're just not. You're not going to just stumble across this cold, you know, this Korea, North Korean internal politics game. But it turns out, you know, it's not a half bad game. You know, again, we've got a write up about it on the site.
It clicked with me just today. In fact, a couple of folks just by happenstance, I think, were posting pictures of their visits to the Complete Strategist in Manhattan.
Yeah.
And they went inside and it's a place every gamer should go.
Well, what happened was one person posted a picture from outside. Mark Herman retweeted it and said, best game store in America, and everybody started dogpiling.
Is that it? Okay.
I think that's what happened.
Okay, that makes sense, because Mark could do that. He's got that sort of
oomph. Mark's got that kind of reach.
The greatest game store that ever existed was the Emperor's headquarters in Chicago, bar none. But the Complete Strategist comes close. And one of the things you notice, and you just realize how much you miss, is the shelf of games.
Yeah.
You know, just row upon stack of shrink-wrapped brand new war games. And to your point, Brent, you look through there and you're like, oh, what's this? You know, you can shelf browse just like we could in libraries when those things were a thing.
Yeah.
And this is probably the last gasp of that, because most FLGSs are not going to, yeah, sure, they'll stock some war games and they're, God bless them for it. Most aren't going to stock that many, and they're not going to do what the Complete Strategist does. And given the fact that we can actually just take out a big old sheet of paper and go, ooh, ah, and circle and cross out and all that other stuff, that's pretty special.
Yeah, yeah. Well, guys, this has been a long podcast. Audience, thank you for sticking with us through it. Gentlemen, I hope you've enjoyed our annual romp through the catalog here. This is always a fun episode to look forward to and to actually do when we do this every year. So I do hope we've helped the audience spend some money. I hope we've helped our podcasters spend some money, because, you know, that never hurts. We're always happy to help people spend some money. Let's have another podcast again next week. And I no idea what we've got coming up. We've got other fun stuff coming up this season, and hope you guys are enjoying where we are so far in season 7. So to Jim and to both mics, thank you guys very much for being here, and we'll do it all again later.